Let's start with the surprising result in Michigan with Sanders over Clinton. What does this mean for Bernie, and what does this mean for Hillary?
Well, first let me say that this was an enormous surprise because the polls were predicting a Clinton win. And what I'm talking about when I say the polls is the major, highly respected polling organizations that if either looked at individually or more likely what was happening with a lot of analyses, some sort of average of all of these polls, they were saying a significant Clinton win. And obviously that did not happen. It was very close. Sanders eked out a small victory, but a small victory is still a victory that he will carry into the next set of contests. And he did better than expected among certain groups of voters. And so this is something that is worrisome because Michigan is very representative of some large, diverse, high population states, especially, of course, in the so-called industrial or now Rust Belt Midwest. So the fact that, yes, he continued to do very well with younger voters, but that had been showing up thus far in other contests. The difference last night seems, or yesterday, seems to have been the fact that he did very well with voters who called themselves independents, and that was a sizable number, I think of something like a quarter of all voters yesterday in the Democratic primary call themselves independents, and not quite, but around 70%, I think, of them went for Sanders, although Clinton thought, I think, that she would win on the economy and jobs. Sanders did very well on that, especially apparently on the issue of free trade, which seems to be a big issue in Michigan because of loss of jobs. African Americans, of course, remained a very strong center of support for her, but in comparison to some of the other states where she's done very well, the African American vote, although again going solidly for her, was not as solidly. And Sanders did well among working class voters, and that's a large percentage of the Democratic constituency in Michigan. So he did well in a variety of different demographic groups. Now, I'm not saying that she didn't do well in some groups, to say, especially African Americans, but he did better than expected.
Okay. So, like you said, a win is a win for Sanders. But because Michigan is a proportional delegate state, Clinton's still moving along that delegate count. So despite Sanders being able to trumpet, we won Michigan, we won Michigan, does a close race in Michigan still benefit Hillary in the long run?
Well, it benefits her because she is accumulating delegates. So proportional representation is very important for her. And what we have to remember is the Democratic contests are all proportional representation proportional allocation of the delegates. So that system will continue for the Democrats throughout the rest of the primary season. It just, what I think this represents is that Sanders can say with all truthfulness that he is doing well among a variety of constituencies, that his message is resonating with a significant segment of the Democratic electorate. He's being very adept at raising funds, and he will definitely continue. I think he would have been continuing even had he lost Michigan, but this gives him and his supporters further incentives. So this is not going to be a short primary season in all probability for the Democrats.
How much does this set back the Clinton camp in terms of her having to continue to focus on the primary and Bernie rather than being able to be the presumptive nominee and start to focus on the Republican side?
You know, there's a whole lot of lore out there about, oh, it's really good to win your contests very quickly and then turn to a general election strategy, but that doesn't always work. For example, 2008, the Clinton-Obama contest was extremely long and drawn out, and we all know who won the general election in 2008. It was the Democrats. So just having a short primary season does not guarantee an easy ride in the fall.
It is the 2008 primary contest between Obama and Clinton, is that anything like what we're seeing here with Sanders and Clinton, where Clinton, even in 2008, was the, you know, presumptive front runner, and then all of a sudden, you know, the senator from Illinois kind of comes out of nowhere and builds a lot of momentum and all of a sudden appeals to young people and is very adept at raising funds? Are we seeing a repeat of 2008 for Hillary Clinton?
I'm not sure about that. Of course, one of the things clever political scientists, and I sometimes like to try to think of myself as clever, do not do nearly as good a job of forecasting as we do of analyzing what's actually already occurred. But Clinton is doing much better among African Americans than she did in 2008. And that's a huge segment of the Democratic base. So I don't think this year is completely comparable. But Sanders is doing better than most forecasters expected. She's still, however, significantly in the lead, especially if you add in those quote-unquote superdelegates who are unpledged. However, in 2008, they were initially on her side, and then eventually, when Obama started winning, switched to him. But at this point, they're still solidly behind her.
Gotcha. So, I suppose this isn't really unexpected results because Trump was predicted to win Michigan. But a lot of folks on the establishment Republican side of things, from the sound of it, are getting pretty worried about having Trump in a general election. And it sounds like they're starting to talk about a contested convention and all sorts of things. What's going on the Republican side as far as you saw from the numbers last night?
Well, you're absolutely right. Trump was forecast through preliminary polling results to do well, and he actually came through. The big question, I think, for Trump from the previous set of primaries last week was whether he was somehow faltering. Was last week a high point for Trump, and was he then going to decline? And last night's results showed that he's absolutely in the lead at this point and very much in it for the long haul. The fact that Rubio, who is the person who has the most support or had the most support of the so-called GOP establishment, did quite poorly last night, or certainly signifies some problems for the part of the GOP electorate and leadership that wanted to fall behind him. Senator Cruz certainly seems to be at the moment a more viable alternative to Trump, but Trump is still very much in the lead. The big question is, will he be able to get an absolute majority of the delegates? Because you can't win on the first ballot unless you have an absolute majority of the delegates.
So, essentially, what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the Republicans, none of the Republican candidates that are remaining are very likely to drop out, because it sounds like what the game plan is to try to deny Trump the 1,237 delegates that he would need to secure the nomination and go to Cleveland in a contested convention. How unusual is that?
That in very recent years is an unusual situation, but we've had contested conventions in the second half of the 20th century, so it's not an unknown situation. It is, of course, much better for the candidate to be able to win on the first ballot. It's interesting because, well, I think we'll see this coming week And, you know, I've been saying that now for a whole bunch of weeks. We'll see this coming week. But we have five large states voting this coming week, and it will be, and two of them are very important to two of the competitors, both to Cruz and Trump, of course, and that's Kasich in Ohio and Rubio in Florida. And it will be very intriguing to see if those two people win their home states. And that is not guaranteed at this point by any means. So what will happen in those two states is particularly important also because they are the first two states for the Republicans to have winner-take-all results, and those are large, heavily populated states. So how Trump does in those states will certainly be an indicator of how he might be able to fare in terms of getting a majority of the delegates.
The last numbers that I had seen showed that Rubio's support nationwide and in Florida is slipping. He's losing points in the polls, and Kasich is seeing a big jump heading into his home state. If Rubio doesn't take Florida, is there any reason for him necessarily to stay in the race other than to try to force the contested convention?
It will be interesting to see what he and his advisors see as their strategic calculus. Certainly his path, as they say, has greatly narrowed, but it's hard to predict often how people will behave under certain dire circumstances. One of the big problems for Rubio will be the extent to which he still has financial support. How is his fundraising doing? Are outside organizations, big donors, such as some of the large super PACs, still going to be doing advertising on his behalf? I think if he doesn't win in Florida, that's going to become more problematic for him.
All right. Another thing I wanted to touch on is a lot of analysis that we've been hearing, not only from the national media, but also some of our other local experts here at Grand Valley, is that Donald Trump is being widely described as a demagogue who is playing to people's fears and lack of faith in government and the economy and banking and all sorts of other industries. And the general consensus is that it seems like because of Sanders' big surge and Trump's very surprising, continuation of support over the past several months, it seems like a lot of people are voting based on fear. Do you think that there's any basis to that?
I think that people this election cycle are distressed about the economy. They're distressed about the status of America in the world. I think there's a lot of angst, I would say, among the voters on both sides of the political aisle. I do not think this is simply a phenomenon related to Trump. I think we're seeing with the Sanders victory in Michigan, people, again, a significant percentage of Democratic voters saying that they're very worried about trade and what this has done in terms of job loss. So to, I think, dump all of the negative sentiment out there in the voter ether on Trump's head is unfair. I certainly think he has done a very effective job of capturing that voter sentiment and turning it to his benefit. But I certainly don't think he's creating it.
Big set of results coming next week for us to say wait and see, because I think if we've established one thing over the past month or so, it's that we can't really count on pretty much anything, right?
I think we can count on voters still remaining somewhat anxiety-ridden, fearful, and for many voters, angry about the situation, distrustful, cynical. So there is, I think, very much a mood out there. I think that Sanders, interestingly enough, is capturing both a sentiment of hope, especially among young people, and idealism, but also capturing the votes of people who feel disaffiliated and somehow disempowered. And I think that latter sentiment, the displaced, dispowered, and anger about that is also very prevalent among Trump voters. So there is there's very much a set of feelings in the air that I think contribute to some of the difficulties in predicting this year.
It sounds very much like you're getting behind the kind of basic thought that voters are voting with their hearts and not necessarily on a specific policy issue as they have in years past.
I think it's a variety of policy issues that people are voting on, but I think also, but I think those policy issues come from the sense of concern and worry. So, for example, support for Trump for building a wall between the U.S. and Mexico, you know, that certainly people are some people are supporting him, quite a few, on the basis of that policy proposal, but the reason that that policy proposal is resonating is people's fears and anxieties about jobs and the economy.
Last question for you, Erica, is at this point we're seeing a lot more kind of vitriol and awful rhetoric between the two parties and amongst the parties, especially on the Republican side, with a lot of name calling and real negative tone to debates and discussions and insults and that sort of thing. Whoever ends up taking the general coming up here at the end of the year in November, what are the chances that whoever ends up winning the next presidency is going to be able to accomplish any of the things that they're talking about based on how extremely divided along party lines the government as a whole is?
Well, the whole issue of political polarization in the contemporary United States is an issue that will take hours to discuss. It certainly is showing up currently with Obama's time in office. It's something that is not going to end with this coming campaign. We are, at the moment, a divided nation with people feeling very strongly, often, a common sense of, as I said, unease and concern about that, but with a variety of different solutions and with divided government seeming to be around for our immediate future at the federal level, I don't think the notion of polarization is going to easily be overcome. And that means then that the kinds of things that further Americans' feelings of distrust in government, which is these people are not accomplishing anything, is just going to be a phenomenon that continues and then furthers distrust. So we've got a vicious circle going here.
A vicious circle that is going to get worse before it gets better, from the sound of it.
Well, I would hope to be able to say that I feel more optimistic, but at the moment I'm perhaps not feeling so optimistic.